Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's you, Jamie. Don't be alarmed, but I think there's a guy following you. Maybe we should get that guard dog we talked about? Nothing too scary, maybe like a Bichon with an attitude? You know, Progressive's collision insurance covers injured dogs and cats at no extra cost, so... Wait, the guy stood up when I stood up. He's on the phone. He's looking right at me. Oh, wait, it's just my reflection. Don't tell anyone about this.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Pet coverage not available in New Hampshire and North Carolina.
Welcome to Marijuana Compassion and Common Sense, the show that tells you the truth about marijuana, reveals the politics behind its prohibition, gives you the facts about its legendary health and medical benefits, and tries to clear up all that legal mumbo-jumbo that makes it so difficult, so dangerous, and nearly impossible for you to avail yourself of this ancient medicinal herb. Welcome to today's show. I hope you are joining us here. Well, I know you're joining us here because you wouldn't be hearing me if you weren't joining us here. Well, thank you for logging in. You don't tune us in. Thank you for logging in to Marijuana Compassion and Common Sense. We are thrilled to have you here listening, and we have a wonderful show for you. My name is Lanny Swerdlow, registered nurse, legal nurse consultant, and marijuana activist for about two decades. And this show is designed to acquaint you with people across the country, sometimes around the world, who are active in the movement. And today we are very fortunate to have Dean Seens, who is the deputy director of Peachtree Normal. You know, when it comes to marijuana, living in the South can be very dangerous. Georgia reflects that danger, but change is afoot, as Atlanta, Georgia, decriminalized marijuana possession in October 2017. Last month, they just did it! Leading the charge to reform Georgia's draconian marijuana laws is Peachtree Normal. You know, Georgia's the Peachtree State, so it's Peachtree Normal, battling for common sense marijuana laws where few dare to tread. Dean Seens, as I said, is the deputy director of Peachtree Normal, has been involved for years working to end marijuana prohibition. On this special segment of Marijuana Compassion and Common Sense, Dean speaks out about the current laws in Georgia today, the political environment regarding changing the law, Normal's role in Atlanta's recent decriminalization of marijuana, how easily is marijuana available, what's being done to change the law, what Peachtree Normal is up to, and a few more intriguing tidbits about life in the Deep South. So stick around. We're going to be getting to Dean in just about 10 minutes. But right now, I want to talk to you about a little thing that's been going around. You know, there was a meme going around that California produces far more marijuana than it consumes. I was hearing that. And if this is true, this could have a significant negative consequences for the ganja entrepreneurs who are investing tens of millions of dollars in building cultivation facilities in the cities that are expecting cannabis manna from heaven to alleviate their fiscal problems and provide the financial resources to improve schools, healthcare, community programs, and a truckload of infrastructure improvements. So, is this meme true? So I did some research to ascertain what is going on. Well, I completed the research, and not only is the meme of overproduction true, it appears to be even worse than originally foretold. In a report prepared for the California Department of Food and Agriculture at the request of the Bureau of Cannabis Control, the report's entitled Economic Impact Analysis of Medical Cannabis Cultivation Program Regulations. Investigators unequivocally concluded that production for both medical and recreational marijuana is far outstripping consumption. Here's what it said. Quote, this analysis estimates total statewide production equals 13.5 million pounds. This is likely a conservative estimate, but it is the first comprehensive database estimate of total production in the state. end quote. And they go on. They further say, quote, assuming casual users purchase 1/8 of an ounce, 3.5 grams, per month, and regular users purchase 3/4 of an ounce, 21 grams per month, annual cannabis consumption in California is between 2.2 and 2.6 million pounds. So just how bad is this? Well, even if we cut the estimate of production in half and double the amount of consumption, California will still be producing almost 2 million more pounds than it consumes. California cities are allowing merited cultivation, are literally salivating at the thought of the tax money that will be generated. But if these statistics are right, this is a bubble that is going to burst with disastrous consequences. Part of the problem is that marijuana proponents have generated high expectations of the revenue that will be produced with marijuana legalization. And for some irrational reason, these expectations seem to be centering on cultivation. Yes, there is significant tax revenue to be made, but it's not with cultivation. Like almost any other product, it is the manufacture and distribution where most money is made. For example, in 2014, $9.4 billion worth of milk was produced by dairy farmers, while the manufacture and distribution of dairy products from this milk totaled approximately $21 billion. More apropos in comparison is the wine industry. The value of cultivated grapes grown in California, whether for table or wine, is about $5 billion annually. In 2015, California's wine industry generated $57.2 billion in revenue. Needless to say, California and local government make far more money taxing the finished product than they do the grapes that make up the finished product. Just like any other agricultural product, most of the money will not be made in cultivation of marijuana, especially as the cost to cultivation will plummet. When California's farmers enter the market big time after 2023, when Prop 64 allows unlimited cultivation size, the cost of the raw material will plunge even further. I know there are many small growers out there that claim you can't grow marijuana on a big scale like you can grow tomatoes, grapes, or coffee. Maybe you can't, but I wouldn't bet on it. Our farmers are very resourceful, and if there is money to be made cultivating cannabis on a large scale, they will figure out how to produce a quality product that they can sell and make money on. Yes, there will be room for boutique marijuana cultivators, but people are not flocking to boutique grape growers. They are flocking to boutique wineries. For those of you who are truly want to get into the cannabis business and make money at it, you should look at manufacturing and distributing. Create delectable edibles. Craft killer concentrates. Produce quality pre-rolls. Manufacture tinctures, bombs, lotions, and all those other cannabis products that people want. Let the farmers grow it for you to manufacture and distribute. According to statistics piled by the California Department of Food and Agriculture, California produces almost half of all the fruits and vegetables grown in this country, as well as a whopping share of the livestock and dairy our nation consumes. No doubt, when marijuana is legal throughout the U.S. and can be transported as easily across state lines as walnuts, California produces 99% of all walnuts sold in the U.S., California's marijuana crop will be exported across the country and around the world. That level of legalization is probably a decade away. Until then, there is one other way to ensure that the marijuana cultivated in California will be consumed, and is a way that is sure to drive those opposed to marijuana up the wall. Like the milk, wine, cereal, and other industries that manufacture products from agricultural commodities, the cannabis industry needs to form trade associations that market their products to the public. The Dairy Council of California touts how healthy milk is, even though we outgrew our need for milk at around 4 years of age. And all the science points to milk not being all that good for adults. The Wine Institute of California makes a big deal out of a glass of red wine being heart healthy, which is really nonsense. You want to do something good for your heart? Forgo the wine and take a 30-minute walk 4 or 5 times a week. That will improve your heart health. With its scientific proven ability to lessen stress, mitigate depression, decrease the likelihood of developing cancer, safely diminish pain, and reduce alcohol consumption, the cannabis industry should be able to put the milk and wine industries to shame with programs and publicity extolling the virtues of cannabis consumption. If cities, counties, and the state want to make significant tax revenues, it will come from manufacturers and distributors and not from farmers. I have no idea what cities and counties are thinking, and I especially have no idea what all those cultivating ganja entrepreneurs are thinking, but I can't help but wonder, what have they been drinking? Okay, there you go. So, all these cities, where I live down here in the Coachella Valley, we've got Desert Hot Springs and Palm Springs and Cathedral City and Coachella, all betting the bank on marijuana cultivation. Desert Hot Springs authorized 2 million square feet of marijuana cultivation. Adelanto, that's just here in the Inland Empire. We've got it going on everywhere else. Where are all most of the marijuana crop that is grown right now in California is transported illegally out of state? And what are these ganja entrepreneurs going to, all their crops start coming to fruition this year or in 2018, where are they going to sell all? They can't take it out of state. They can't take it out of state. I guess maybe the price is going to plummet. I would hope so. I want to see marijuana cheap. But, you know, most of these people are growing indoors. They're building these very expensive facilities with lights and electricity and all this kind of stuff. The marijuana they produce is not going to be cheap. Now, I will admit that some of them, like some of those here in Desert Hot Springs, are actually building fairly large greenhouses. And greenhouses don't begin to require the amount of electricity and equipment that places built indoor cultivation. And to build a greenhouse is far less expensive than building a building. So maybe they'll be able to get their costs down. But once again, they're still competing with all the marijuana that's already being grown here. So I don't know what these people are thinking. But really, folks, you know, I get people calling me and talking to me all the time. I want to cultivate. If you want to cultivate for your own self, go ahead. But if you want to cultivate and really expect to make a lot of money, you can't. Now, I will say that Proposition 64 does allow for what's called a microbusiness license, kind of like a little winery. So you can, you know, grow up to 10,000 square feet. You know, it's about a quarter of an acre. If you have some land somewhere and you sit in your county government or local government allows you to do it, and you can have people come to your place and you can actually sell it elsewhere. So small growers might be able to make some money. But, folks, if you're thinking you're going to be growing this marijuana and selling it for, you know, $1,500, $2,000 a pound, it ain't going to be happening. It's going to be going way lower. And, frankly, you know, if you could sell marijuana for $100 a pound and you can grow a quarter of an acre of marijuana, you can still make a lot of money at $100 a pound. And that would be wonderful because people need to have access to marijuana safely, reliably, locally, and affordably. You know, a few months ago at our meetings here in Palm Springs, this guy walked in there. He was a cancer patient. He was complaining that, you know, he's on chemotherapy. He wanted to get marijuana, but he couldn't afford it. It was too expensive. He was on a fixed income. He's on Medicaid. I don't want to hear people saying they can't afford marijuana and they have to go for and they have to take the government-provided Percocet and Vicodin or whatever. Marijuana should be cheap. And really, it should be like coffee, about $15 a pound, but I'll settle for $100 a pound. And, you know, if you're growing marijuana, you got a quarter-acre plot, you get $100 a pound, you're going to get a fair return for your work. Not if you're growing indoors, but if you're growing outdoors, you will. Anyway, so that's my little comment for today. And if you have any comments you would like to make about that to me, I'll be glad to hear from you. I'll even put you on the show sometime. There's two ways to get hold of me. You can write me at Lanny, L-A-N-N-Y, at marijuananews.org. That's one word, marijuananews.org. Lanny at marijuananews.org. Or you can call me, 760-799-2055, 760-799-2055. I'd love to hear if you have some topics you think we should be covering, whatever. I'd really like to hear from you. Okay, well, now I know what you would really like to hear is the reason you tune in to today's show, and that is to hear our guest, Dean Sains. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, so I'm going to bring him into the studio, the director of Peachtree Normal, Dean Sains. Welcome to our show, Dean.
Hi, welcome. Glad to be here.
Did I pronounce your last name right? Is that Sains or Sains?
It's Sains.
Sains, okay. That's kind of like the mathematical thing, isn't it? Sine. Yeah. All right, very good. Well, thank you so much. You know, I met you when I went down to Atlanta, Georgia, in October for the International Drug Policy Conference that was being held in Atlanta. The International Drug Policy Forum is held every other year. It's sponsored by the Drug Policy Alliance, and they bring over 1,500 people from 80 different countries to these conferences every other year. And they've always wanted to have one in the Deep South, and they finally did it, having it in Atlanta, Georgia. So it was really interesting to go down there. I wasn't sure what to expect, but, Dean, Atlanta's a pretty nice city.
Yeah, we like it. You know, I mean, we're supposed to be the gateway and the Mecca of the South, and we're the cradle of the civil rights movement. So in my opinion and everything, I think we should be the leaders in the marijuana reform movement in the South.
Absolutely. Actually, you know, when I was there, one of the places I visited was the Museum of Civil and Human Rights, and which kind of showed just how important a role Atlanta played in the civil rights movement in the United States. And so it seems kind of apropos that Atlanta has just gone ahead and decriminalized marijuana, one of the first cities in the entire South to actually have done so, I believe. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, actually, it wasn't decriminalized. It was descheduled, because decriminalization means that it would be legal, and technically it's still not legal, but they just changed the penalties and everything. Now, simple possession for personal use of less than an ounce is punishable by a ticket of $75. But this is up to the discretion of the police officer, and before this and everything, possession of up to an ounce for simple possession was punishable by up to 1 year in jail and a $1,000 fine. So it is a step forward. It's not complete decriminalization, but it's a step in the right direction.
Well, now, when you say it's up to the police officer, can an Atlanta police officer, if he gets stopped, somebody with less than an ounce, can they charge them under state law, or can they only charge them under the new city law?
Well, that's still sort of a gray area and everything. Technically, they're supposed to enforce the city code, but like I said, it's up to the discretion of the officer. This is just for simple possession. Now, if there's any other underlying charges, if you're stopped, if you're in an automobile accident and they find marijuana in the car, then most likely you're going to be charged with on the state charges. You can still face jail time and a heavy penalty.
So it's you're still at the mercy of the police officer that happens to find you with the marijuana.
Exactly.
But
this is a big choice now.
They have a choice. They didn't have a choice. They only could do it under state law. Now they can do it on the lesser penalty under Atlanta law.
Right. Yeah. Clarkston, Georgia, a small town just north of us up near Athens and everything, they passed theirs last year. They were the first city in Georgia to do this, and they imposed a $75 fine. And so far it's been working very well for them. They said it's freed up the police officers. It's helped to declutter the backlog of cases that they've had in their civil courts and everything. So, we were happy to see this in Atlanta. We've been working on this with the Atlanta City Council for a couple of years, and finally got them to the point and everything to where they're like, okay, statistically, almost 93% of people arrested in Metro Atlanta for simple possession have been Afro-American. So, it was racially very disproportionate and everything. And so this was one of the cases that we made for them. And, you know, since Atlanta does have a large African-American population and everything, you know, we're just tired of seeing people, you know, penalized and everything for simple possession and for youthful indiscretion and everything, especially young people, because if you were arrested in Georgia for simple possession and everything, if you were on a Hope Scholarship or any kind of a Pell Grant or anything to go to school, you automatically lost that. So you would be kicked out of school. You could be, you know, I mean, it was just, you know, the draconian laws are just, it was just unbelievable the way that we're treating our citizens here and, you know, and emphasizing, as Michelle Alexander did at the DPA conference and everything, you know, is the prison to the school to prison pipeline.
Yeah,
and, you know, Georgia has been, you know, just really bad with that and everything. So, unfortunately, I have been hearing reports that we are still having some people arrested, even for simple possession. I was just told the other night and everything about a girl that was caught with around I think it was 3.2 grams. And they arrested her and processed her through jail. She had to post bond, and now she has a court appearance and everything. But hopefully when if she does take it to trial and it does go to court, that the judge will either – the prosecutor or the judge will throw it out, or they will impose a $75 fine, which means it won't go on her permanent record. But if not, then she'll have a drug conviction on her record.
Now, this one city that did it before Atlanta, was that a college town?
Well, they're right outside of a college town and everything. They have a large student population that lives there and everything. Like I said, they're just right outside the University of Athens and everything, UGA.
Gotcha.
So, but now, with the Atlanta City Ordinance, one thing about it does not apply to college campuses and to the college campus police, which we have Georgia Tech, we have Emory University, we have Spelman College, we have Morehouse College. And they all have their own privatized police forces on campus. But we're hoping through the educational process and everything that they will respect the city ordinance and everything, because generally what they do on college campuses, they mirror whatever the city ordinances are. So we're hoping that it's going to flow over to that and everything. But right now, you know, we're still trying to educate these kids and everything and let them know, you know, don't take this for granted and everything. You know, don't do anything stupid. You know, still use common sense when it comes to this. You know, don't be out. Don't think that you can be out in public smoking and everything and get away with it, because you know, like I said, it's still up to the discretion of the officer. And if you know, as many medical patients will tell you, and you know, people that smoke and everything, if you have different strains, you tend to keep them separated. And if it's in more than one packaging container or anything like that, you can still be charged with possession with intent to distribute. So, like I said, a lot of it falls onto the discretion of the police officers. And most of them that I've spoken with and everything, they've been in full support of this for a long time. They said it'll free them up to, you know, to go after the more serious crimes that we're, you know, that we're facing and everything, you know.
Yeah. Now, how did this come about in the city? I mean, what did Peachtree Normal play a role in getting the city to do this, or what inspired the city to pass this reduction in the severity of the offense?
It was a combined effort of a lot of different reform groups and everything, Atlanta Harm Reduction, Peachtree Normal, Georgia Care Project. You know, it was a combined effort of a lot of different groups and everything. We went down there. We attended city council meetings. We talked to our council members, and, you know, and we've been, like I said, we've been working with them for about 2 years, educating them, providing them with facts and statistics, and showing them other cities across the U.S., major cities that had done this, and the amount of money that they were saving in, you know, in the booking and processing of people, and also, you know, freeing up the court systems and everything. So it took a while, but, you know, we finally convinced them.
And I understand it was unanimous.
Yes, it was. It, you know, we had a little bit of a dissension that day and everything, and we weren't sure if it was going to go through or not. But when it came down for the final vote and everything, it was a unanimous vote by all the city council members, which we thank them all for their support in this.
Well, you know, when I talked to a number of people down there, they kind of said, for the most part, Atlanta is a speck of progressivism in a sea of ultra-red conservatism in Georgia. Is there much conflict between the city and the state?
There is to a degree. Now, I've been working, we've been working very closely with the people under the Gold Dome at the State House down here and everything, you know, in getting bills introduced and everything. And we do have a good decrim bill. We have one introduced into the Senate last year, and we have another one being introduced into the House this year. So we'll have two bills going that will make it a statewide decriminalization of possession of less than an ounce would be a $100 fine. And that would be statewide, you know, which we're hoping, fingers crossed and everything, that we can get this move forward this year. But we still have a lot of conservatives that are not on board with this. So there is still some dissension in the ranks, but we're working to change that.
Yeah. Well, what's it, so if you're, except for Atlanta and this other town that you mentioned, what's it like? Trying to get marijuana. Well, but by the way, including Atlanta, how easy is it to get marijuana in the South, in Georgia?
You can ask any high school student and everything, and they'll say it's easier to get marijuana than it is to get alcohol. That's one of the things that, you know, that we've been trying to convince them of and everything, that, you know, I guess some of these people are living in a bubble or something, and they don't think that marijuana is readily available in Georgia and everything, and it is. It is probably one of Georgia's number one cash crops besides peanuts and cotton and everything, you know.
Really?
Yes. I mean, you know, we have a lot of in-state cultivation. You know, it's not legal here to cultivate it and everything, but there is a huge black market available here in Georgia and everything, and I've been a consumer for going on almost 40 years now, and any time that I need it, as long as I've got the money, it's not hard to find and everything. Usually it's not more than, you know, a phone call away. I mean, to be honest about it, you know.
How is the quality of the marijuana being produced in Georgia?
Well, actually, we produce some very good cannabis here in Georgia and everything. You know, I mean, it's like anything else, you know. I mean, it's a buyer's market and everything, you know. If you want it, you can find it and everything, you know. I mean, it's just what you're willing to pay for it and everything. I mean, prices are a little bit high and everything. On the average here in Georgia, for top quality marijuana and everything, you're going to pay around probably anywhere from $300 to $400 an ounce for it. You've got your mid grade, and you've got your low grade, the Mexican brickweed and everything, which the cartels bring in and everything. But you don't see too much of that anymore and everything, because people have found that, you know, it's just, it's not that good. And if the people are going to spend their hard-earned money, they want, you know, quality for their product. I mean, they want quality of the product, and they want, you know, the best bang they can get for their buck.
Well, it would seem like the climate in Georgia would be kind of ideal for producing good quality marijuana. I mean, it's a temperate state, so it's not too hot, it's not too cold. It seems like it'd be wonderful for growing fairly decent quality bud.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, Georgia is a huge agricultural state. That's the biggest industry in our state is our agriculture and everything, you know. And basically, I mean, you know, like you said, I mean, we're a very temperate climate and everything. So, I mean, it's ideal for producing it and everything. I mean, we do have some cold spots, but, you know, we're kind of sitting in a good position and everything, because, you know, we're not quite as hot as Florida, and we're not quite as cold as, you know, like the Carolinas and everything. We don't get a lot of snow here. Even in Atlanta and everything, you know, if we get snow, we may get like a half inch, you know, at a time, and maybe once or twice a year. But, you know, for the most part and everything, we have, you know, we have good conditions, good climate. So, I mean, the production of quality cannabis and everything is relatively easy to do in the state.
Okay, well, it's kind of like California was, I guess, before the medical thing. I mean, it's, you know, people want it, and people are going to produce it. And like you said, you can get it without much problem. How do most people? I mean, do they kind of go? It's they don't advertise it in Craigslist, do they? How do most people find marijuana in Georgia?
Most people, it's usually generated through word of mouth and everything. You know, I mean, you know somebody, or you have a friend that has a friend or something like that. Like I said, it's primarily a black market.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's exclusively a black market because it's illegal. for in-state cultivation and everything. So, you know, but I mean, you know, and we do have some of the California bud and everything. You know, I see quite a bit of it floating around here and everything. So it is being exported out there, like you said earlier, illegally. But you know, it's all about supply and demand and everything. I mean, if there's demand for it, then somebody is going to supply it. So it's just a matter of, you know, going out here and finding it. I mean, you can go within 4 or 5 blocks of the state capitol and everything, and some of the neighborhoods up there and everything, and basically just walk down the street, and if you're looking for it and everything, you can find it. It's not hard to find.
Well, now, how about medical marijuana? Is there anything being done on the front of that? Has Georgia become a CBD state or anything like that? What's happening with the medical use of cannabis?
Okay, well, we did pass a medical, well, I call it a quasi medical marijuana law in Georgia and everything in 2015, the Haley's Hope Act, which covered 8 ailments. And let's see here, just a second here, I'll tell you. It covered cancer, end-stage, seizure disorders, and severe end-stage ALS, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, sickle cell disease, Crohn's disease, and mitochondrial disease. And then we turn around, and last year got added AIDS, Alzheimer's, autism, autoimmune disease, endometriosis, bilharzia, which is a skin disease, peripheral neuropathy, and Tourette syndrome were added. But it is a 5% or less THC-based oil, an oil form only. But the drawback to that is we have no in-state cultivation or distribution. So basically all this law did is just said that if you have the means to be able to go out of state and procure what you need, and you can bring it back here. You can possess, if you have a medical card, you can possess 20 ounces of the oil and not be prosecuted. But you have to break federal law in order to import it into the state.
Yeah. Well, now, there's not much on the black market in Georgia for people to get it. So it's mainly people going out of state and bringing it back with them.
Right. Well, we do have a few manufacturers that are, you know, specifically geared toward helping the patients and everything that are making the oil for the patients here in the state. And one of our state representatives, Alan Peek, which was the driving force behind the Haley's Hope Act and everything, he has went on TV and everything and made the public announcement that he makes a monthly donation to a out-of-state company and everything that we will not name, for security reasons, but he makes a monthly contribution to them, and then a few days later, a box shows up at his office with the 5% THC oil that he then gives to somebody else, and it's distributed amongst the patients. But it's still, you know, like I said, you know, it's still illegal on a federal level and everything, you know, but he, I guess he felt comfortable enough and everything, and he feels that he's got enough support from the people here in Georgia and everything that, you know, we're not going to let them, you know, railroad him and come in there and try to prosecute him. But like I said, you know, right now it's still strictly, you know, a black market and everything, and people are having to go through the black market, which is unregulated and uncontrolled. You never know what you're going to get. And, you know, having to basically produce this oil for themselves. And this is one of the big things that Peachtree Normal is working with our senators and our representatives for next year and everything, is to get an in-state cultivation and distribution program set up for Georgia.
Gotcha. Well, that's at least that's a start. I mean, you know, you got to start somewhere, and that's a start, so that's a good thing. Well, listen, we got to take a little break here for a few minutes to talk about a couple of other things, and then we'll get back, because I want to talk a little bit about what you're doing in Georgia, how long, and what that kind of stuff, and I also talk a little bit about what the future things that Peachtree Normal is going to be working on. So just hang tight, Dean, and we'll be right back with you. Okay.
All right.
Well, here we go. We've got a couple things I want to talk about. One of the things I want to talk about is Higher Power 420. That's right. You want to help support the show and get a wonderful print for your wall, a signed and limited edition print? Well, then listen on. Higher Power 420 is a gorgeous and mind-boggling limited edition print of everyone's favorite deities in a joyous 420 celebration. Conceived and designed by moi, Lanny Swerdlow, and artistically rendered by Shane Master Creation Hibberts, Higher Power 420 is an engaging, thought-provoking, and satiric look at the foibles of religion and the role marijuana can play in today's polarized and estranged world. For thousands of years, marijuana has aided the social cohesion of emerging societies by reducing stress and anxiety. It calms people down and makes it easier for them to exist harmoniously with each other by creating a mental state of altruism, understanding, and compassion. This remains a common communal token experience today, as many cannabis consumers describe achieving a similar mental state when they imbibe. With all the violent religious strife going on in the Middle East, it is not so unreasonable to conclude that the Middle East was a lot calmer and more tolerant when smoking hash was part of the many social interactions and rituals. Cannabis brings people together, broadens their perspective, and helps them take pleasure in the company of other people they normally would find it difficult to be with. That's the core of Higher Power 420, a beautiful art print depicting the gathering together of the iconic religious figures of today enjoying each other's company. Higher Power 420 depicts everyone's favorite deities in a joyous 420 celebration as they escape from their inherent incessant squabbles as they relax and enjoy each other's company while sharing their common, albeit supernatural, humanity. Only cannabis can allow them to kick back with each other as well as help them overlook and forget about their adherents' competing claims to their theistic dominance. In Higher Power 420, they share their common, albeit, like I said, supernatural humanity. Higher Power 420 is a limited edition iconograph. Each 16 by 20 art print is signed and numbered by the artist and comes with a certificate of authenticity. Be the first to have one adorn the wall of your home or office. Sure to be a conversation starter in any situation. Also makes the perfect gift for your sophisticated cannabis connoisseur friends. Cost is only $24.20, and that includes all shipping and handling charges. To see this thought-provoking and iconoclastic print and to order your personal copy of a signed and numbered limited edition, go to www.higherpower420.com, and that's 420, higherpower420.com. That's higherpower420.com. Check it out. You can order it right there. You will have a wonderful print for your wall or for a friend, and you will also help support marijuana, compassion, and common sense. Okay, one other thing I want to tell you, you like what you hear on the show, you like my little intro, today's intro about overproduction and underconsumption of marijuana in the state of California. Hey, well, I write a newsletter, and it's absolutely free, and you can get it. Just go to our website, marijuananews.org. That's one word, marijuananews.org. And at the top of the page, you'll see where it says newsletter. Click on that, sign up on it, and you will start receiving my free email newsletter. I send it out, two, three, four times a month, and always different topics. One of my last one, I had talked about the conference in Atlanta, Georgia, and Dean referred to Michelle Alexander's presentation. I talked about it. You know, it's about the opioid crisis versus the crack crisis we have there. An amazing story, and you can read all about it, and you can actually click on the link that you can see her presentation. So, once again, www.marijuananews.org. At the top of the page, click on newsletter and become a subscriber. All right, let's see. Is there anything else I want to mention real quickly? Oh, yeah, one last thing. When you tuned in today or you logged in today, you saw a little follow button and the thing there. If you'll click on the follow button, that would be much appreciated. You will get notice in your email before each new show comes out, and I produce about two new shows a month, so you'll know when it's coming out. But you also kind of help us get up on the Blog Talk Radio pecking ladder. And the more followers we get, the higher we get up, the more publicity Blog Talk Radio gives us. So please become a follower. And by the way, if you didn't notice, when you do log into our show, you're always going to see the current show on top. But if you scroll down, you'll see all the past show, and there's hundreds of past shows there that you can listen to, famous and not so famous people in the marijuana movement who have been on the show over the, gosh, we've been doing this for like 8-9 years now. So a lot of past history is there as well. Okay, well, now we're going to get back to Dean and talk to him a little bit about more what's going on in Georgia. And let's talk a little bit about you, Dean. You said you've lived, how long you've lived in Georgia?
I was actually born here. I was born in Atlanta, Georgia and everything. I'm a native. Lived here pretty much all my life and everything. I did for a time in my youth and everything. I lived in Florida, and then I moved back to Georgia when I was 12 years old, and I've been back here ever since. So I've been back here for 40 years now.
And you've been smoking marijuana for a long time?
Yes. I'm going on almost 40 years. I started kind of early.
How old were you when you started?
I was 12 years old when I smoked when I smoked for the first time.
No,
so I'm dating myself. I'm 52 now. I mean, I'm not ashamed of that. I think I'm proud to have made it this long.
Tell me, all right, you started smoking marijuana when you were 12. Did it cause you any problems when you were a teenager?
No, I actually graduated high school with a 3.84 grade point average. I do not really advocate and recommend that people, you know, use it, you know, on a regular basis when they're young like that and everything, you know. But for me personally and everything, I don't think it's caused me any problems or anything like that. I mean, I have an IQ of 161, so, you know, if it did cause any damage, I mean, who knows, I could have been the next Einstein or something, but, you know, I'm happy where
no.
I'm at. So.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, when you say you started 12, you know, consuming marijuana for you know, they talk about teenagers as lowering IQ, which is a nonsense study and all this kind of stuff. You know, it'll help, you know, with all the stress, you know, they're giving kids Ritalin and all the stress and all this kind of stuff. If they were to smoke some marijuana, they would calm down a bit. They wouldn't be so stressed out. I'm not saying they're encouraging it to be doing, but this freaking out about, you know, about teenagers using cannabis, I think is just way overblown. You know, it's so overblown that here in California we have Prop 64 that allows on-site consumption if the local government wants to allow it. But it says you cannot do it in the presence of people under the age of 21. So a restaurant that is going to have a section where you can consume marijuana while you're dining, they can't have anybody under 21 there. However, it's perfectly okay for a person under 21 to be sitting at the table with the parents as they quaff pitcher after pitcher of beer and glass of Jack Daniels and all this kind of stuff. So the parents can get schlocking drunk in front of the kids. That's okay. But to see them smoking a little, this is the absurdity of we just freak out with marijuana and children. And there's no reason why we should be freaking
exactly.
out.
Exactly. I mean, I've talked with so many parents over the years because I've been in marijuana activism now for going on 20 years, and I have talked to so many, I mean, literally thousands, probably, you know, tens of thousands of parents that have had their children taken away from them because of a drug conviction, because they were busted or because CPS come into their home and found marijuana paraphernalia and found marijuana or kind of, you know, in their house and everything. And, but, you know, now we have people out here that live with alcoholic parents and everything. You know, we do not take somebody's kids away from them if they go out and get a DUI, but you go out here and you get arrested for simple possession and everything, you can lose your kids. You know, that's the hypocrisy that we're facing right now and everything, you know, and, it's like I said, you know, I tell people, I said, you know, knowledge is power. I said, we need to educate people and everything. I said, and let these people know, you know, I mean, because we have truth and science on our side and everything, and all they have is lies and propaganda.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
You know, I mean,
you know, one of the things about Proposition 64 that people don't seem to talk about so much, but there is a section of Prop 64 that says, at least when it comes to medical marijuana, Children's Protective Services and stuff cannot take children away from a people simply because they use marijuana medically. It doesn't do the same thing for parents who are using it recreationally, just medically. I don't know why they did it that way, but at least here in California. So if you have kids and you want to smoke marijuana, you got to go get a doctor's recommendation. That's what it boils down to. It's just bizarre.
Exactly. Yeah. And another thing, like I said, you know, with the science and everything like that, I mean, you know, one of the things that we educate people on is that, you know, all marijuana use is medical, you know, whether you know it or not and everything, because we have an endocannabinoid system and everything. Our bodies are built for this, you know,
right.
And it can do so much to help so many people and everything. You know, I mean, I know so many people that have weaned themselves off of opioids and everything using marijuana, you know.
Weaned themselves off of alcohol. People who are alcoholics were able to get
exactly.
their lives back to normal by using cannabis instead of alcohol. So that's one of its most important. You know, Dennis Perone, of course, is famous for having said all marijuana use is medical. And he was right on target.
Right.
Really is. Well, let's talk a little bit about Peachtree Normal. How did you start this chapter, or how did it get started in Georgia?
Well, actually, we had a group called Georgia for Cannabis, and we had a Georgia Normal chapter at that time and everything, but they weren't as active as we were and everything, and so we started our own group, Georgia for Cannabis, and we were rallying and going down and talking to the P8 House and all like this and everything, and then we were approached by National Normal. Actually, Russ Bevel was outreach coordinator for National at that time and everything, and he contacted us. He says, hey, look, he says, y'all are doing so good down there. He says, we would like to bring you under the Normal moniker and everything. He says, you know, and so we discussed it and everything, and Peachtree Normal was born. And
wow.
That was about 5 years ago. And
it's fairly new organization then.
You know, I mean, well, we've had a Normal chapter active in the state of Georgia since 1978, but, you know, Peachtree Normal came into play about, like I said, you know, roughly a little over about 5.5 years ago. And, you know, originally we had Georgia Normal, we had Peachtree Normal, and we were going to sort of split it up. Georgia Normal was supposed to handle the legislative end, and Peachtree Normal was going to handle the educational end. And we were going to go out and host rallies and everything, but we ended up, we had made so many contacts and everything that the state representatives and stuff, they were kept calling all of us. So Georgia Normal eventually merged with us and everything, and so we now just have one chapter, which is Peachtree Normal, that covers the whole state. And we have satellite chapters around the state that we've started. So that, you know, they can work on their, you know, in their local municipalities and on a local area and everything, because we know it's not always convenient for people to come to Atlanta to a rally or an event. So we've spread out across the state and everything, and we have little satellite chapters that we run all across our state right now and everything, you know, and they help educate people, and they hold monthly meetings and all like this. So, you know, we're growing and expanding every day, and we've got the state pretty much covered now and everything. We've still got a few more that we're looking to get some people in. So if anybody's interested in helping the reform movement in Georgia, please contact us at www.peachtreenormal.org, and you can find out about how getting more involved in everything, because we have a great following here in Georgia, and we know the people of Georgia are ready for this and everything, and we just got to convince them under the Gold Dome and everything that this is what they need.
Well, you know, that's really great. You're spreading throughout the state, because that's what you kind of do. You can't be just located in Atlanta, Georgia. You have to be everywhere throughout the state. You're absolutely doing the right thing. Now, what is it like? I mean, what about finding meeting places, especially in these other places in the states? What do they meet? I mean, I would imagine in some of these conservative areas, holding a meeting about marijuana legalization could be problematic.
Really and truthfully, we've not had too much of a problem with it and everything. We've gotten a very welcome response from most places. We have our meetings are held at different places. Some of them are restaurants. We do some of the local libraries and everything, you know, let us have meeting rooms and all. We just did one in Columbus, Georgia last weekend. We did an activist and lobbyist training class down in Columbus, Georgia last weekend and everything. Myself, Kelly Hammack, our outreach coordinator, and Kim Smith, our secretary and another board member, we went down there and gave a PowerPoint presentation and did a Q&A session and everything, and we had it at a the public library down there and everything, and had a wonderful response. Everybody was very glad to see us and very glad to have us down there, and said that anytime we needed a space to do anything like that, to feel more than welcome to come down there.
Well, there you go. That's really good. You had mentioned that some legislators had contacted you. How is your relationship with elected officials on the state level?
We actually have a very good relationship. I mean, it's taken several years because when we first started going down to the Capitol and everything, I could hear people snickering when they would see us and said, oh, there's those pot people, ha, 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 you know, this and that and everything, you know, which is expected and everything. But we went down there with a different approach. Instead of going down there and scheduling smoke-ins and all this and that stuff and everything, we went down there and we said, we approached them on a one-on-one basis. And we went down there and we said, hey, look, you know, this is what we want to do. You know, this is how it could benefit Georgia. We gave them stats and statistic reports and stuff like this and everything. And we said, how can we work with you on this? You know, can we find common ground that we can work together? And we've had a very good response. Matter of fact, we just had our open meeting last Monday here in Atlanta, and we have Senator Michael Williams, which is running for governor of Georgia next year. He came and spoke to our group and everything, and he is coming out. He is in full support of in-state cultivation and distribution and to expand the medical program. So,
wow.
You know, like I said, we still have, you know, we run into a few. We've got a few that, you know, don't want to see this and everything. And, you know, and I know the reason behind that and everything because a couple of them, they're big stockholders in the pharmaceutical industry and everything, and this is a threat to the pharmaceutical industry, so.
Very much so.
You know,
how does Democrats versus Republicans in Georgia, how does that shape up in regards to support of reforming marijuana laws?
Actually, it seems to be almost like a bipartisan issue for most of them and everything. You know, I mean, we have Republicans and we have Democrats that are both on the same side with this. I compare it to the way that I was a gay rights activist for many years before I, you know, came into the marijuana movement and everything. And it was like, you know, back in the 80s when we were trying to get funding for HIV research and medications and support and everything and on a state level, we had a hard time. We were running into a lot of walls and everything until we started bringing the patients down there and everything, you know, because it's easy to dismiss numbers and statistics on a page. But when you actually put a face to the problem, then it was a little bit harder for them to ignore and everything. And that's kind of the approach that we took here in Georgia and everything. You know, we started taking medical patients down here to the Capitol and going and sitting in on these hearings and everything, you know, and having the patients testify as to how cannabis and how marijuana had helped them and improved their life and everything, you know, and the fear that they live in, that their door's going to be kicked in and they're going to be hauled off to jail. And, you know, not only the legal repercussions and everything, but the health repercussions and everything, you know, how this could greatly demise their health.
Sure.
So, you know, I mean, we found a lot of common ground issues and everything. You know, it's not been an easy road. And like I said, we still have some resistance and everything. You know, our governor is not, he's not really on board with us and everything, but we'll have a new governor next year. So, you know, we're looking forward to that. And, and we're, you know, we brought this to the state, to the people of the state of Georgia and everything, and made this an issue. We did a poll about 3 years ago, and the results even surprised me and everything. We hired a polling company and had them do a poll, and we had more support for legalization than we did for the medical movement at that time, almost 8 points higher for just outright legalization.
What's the percentage for legalization? You know, right now it's running 64% in the country for marijuana legalization.
Right.
What's it running
We were running at that time we were running 62%.
Oh wow. Okay.
We're just about, you know, I mean, a lot of people think that, you know, down here in the South and everything, you know, that we're sort of stuck in a time loop and everything, you know, and in some aspects we are. But, you know, the things are changing and attitudes are changing and everything, you know, and, hopefully Peace Tree Normal has been a huge part of that because, you know, one of our biggest focuses is on educating people and educating the public. And that's why we do what we do. You know, we go out, we host rallies and we go out to different events, you know, I've been invited. I've been a guest speaker at different colleges. I've been invited to different political groups to come and speak to them and everything. And, you know, we talked to them about cannabis reform and, you know, and criminal justice reform and, you know, how nobody belongs in jail for a plant, you know, and this is
true.
A plant that could be. Could be really beneficial. It's like I tell people, I said, if cannabis was just discovered today growing in the Amazon jungle somewhere, it would be held as one of the greatest medical discoveries of the 21st century. I said,
absolutely.
But because of the stigma that's been attached to it and the lies and propaganda and everything, which if you really study your history on it and everything, was all based in prejudice and greed, you know, because of this, then, you know, we have this stigma that's attached to it and everything, and we're trying to tear down those walls. We're trying to show people, you know what? Yeah, we have doctors, we have lawyers, we have elected officials, we have, you know, professionals, heads of industry and everything. These people are marijuana users and have been. Some of them have been for a long time. Some of them are, you know, recently involved in it and everything. But, you know, we need to break down the stigma to people and everything and tell them, say, look, you know, just because you're a cannabis consumer does not make you a bad person, does not make you a derelict, does not make you a drug addict, does not make you, you know, a criminal other than the federal laws regarding it.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true. Speaking of, one last question because we're running out of time here, but, you know, Georgia is surrounded by other southern, Alabama, Tennessee, South Carolina, Florida. How is this reacting with the other states around Georgia? Is there any kind of cooperation going on between you and people in these other states, or is it just kind of each state onto its own?
No, we work very hard and everything, building coalitions and everything with other groups and everything in other states. As a matter of fact, I've been to Alabama several times and everything. I've been over there, spoke at the Alabama State House and everything, you know, on cannabis reform and everything, you know. So, I mean, we try to work really, really closely with them, because if you look at everything that's going on, you know, all the states are on the West Coast or in the Northeast and everything like this. You know, down in the South, you know, it's kind of like, you know, a dead zone down here and everything. So I'm like, you know, hey, the only way we're going to get this, because we are in the Bible Belt, you know,
yeah,
the only way
yeah,
we're going to
yeah,
get
yeah.
this is to, you know, is to work together on this and everything, you know. And I mean, we've worked really closely with people in Alabama. I have a lot of good friends with a lot of support groups over there and everything. You know, we work with them. We work with people in Tennessee. We work with people in Florida and everything, you know. And that was one thing that when we started Peachtree Normal was one of our main focuses and everything. And again, I referenced back to the gay rights movement and everything. When the gay rights movement really became popular and really started gaining ground, it's when all of the little fractions and everything started joining together. Because I tell them, there's always strength in numbers. I said, and we all have different things we can bring to the table. I said, and instead of, you know, each one of us trying to work individually, if we combine our efforts and work together, I said, then we become not the minority, but the majority.
You got it. Well,
I said, that's really, you know, how we've progressed along as well as we have.
That's true. Well, listen, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us on here. Once again, if people want to contact you through Peachtree Normal, how can they do that?
They can contact me directly at dean@peachtreenormal.org, all lowercase, or through Peachtree Normal, www.peachtreenormal.org. And they can learn how they can get involved and, you know, what we've got going on in the state and everything. And one more quick thing, we do have an event coming up this Saturday for Veterans Day. We're going to be doing a demonstration at the VA hospital here in Atlanta and everything, supporting our veterans with PTSD, which is one of the elements that was on our medical expansion bill that did not make it last year and everything. It got cut, and we're hoping to see that go on. And we're going to have a casket filled with pill bottles. And we're going to be talking about the issue of the 22 vets a day that we're losing to suicide and all like this, and how cannabis can help them. So if anybody's in the area and everything and would like to come out and join us and everything, please do. You can find the information to the event and everything on our webpage. And please come out and show your support and everything for our veterans and all that they do for us. And it's time that we do something for them.
You got it. Well, Dean, thank you so much for joining us here on Marijuana, Compassion, and Common Sense. We appreciate it, and best of luck in everything you're doing in Georgia. You're certainly going in the right direction. Take care. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, folks, that was Dean Sines from Peachtree Normal in Georgia. I met him at the Gay Pride celebration. When we were down there, we just happened to be down there when Gay Pride was going on, and they had a little little area where they got all their friends together at the big performance stage, and this kind of stuff was a lot of fun. And it was there, actually, that I had my only hit of marijuana the whole time I was down in Atlanta, Georgia. So thank you very much, Dean, for doing that for me back then. Well, listen, we're running out of time. I want to thank you so much for joining us here on Marijuana Compassion and Common Sense today. I'd like to remind you, please tell your friends about us here on blogtalkradio.com/marijuana news. We count on you to get the word out. And once again, if you'd like to get hold of me, if you got any questions or anything, you can write me at Lanny@marijuananews.org. That's L-A-N-N-Y @marijuananews.org. And you can check out our website at marijuananews.org, where you can subscribe to my email newsletter. So until next week, thank you so much for joining us once again. This is Lanny Swirtle saying thank you for joining us here on Marijuana Compassion and Common Sense, the show that tells you the truth about marijuana.
Okay, keep your eyes closed.
Okay.
I want to show you my first ever painting.
All right.
Okay. Open your eyes.
Oh, that's a lot of colors and shapes.
So be honest. What do you think?
Well, I like how if you switch to Geico, you could save hundreds of dollars on car insurance.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Here, why don't I hold your paintbrush while you call them?
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.